So good morning. We're in week two of our series, Crazy Stupid Love. And if you're new at church today, my name is Laura. Last week, Jeff kicked off this series with the very first step in any relationship building, and that's learning to know somebody. And on the screen in a moment, it was going to come up a diagram called the Relationship Attachment Model. And this is what we're basing our series off, or we're going to call it RAM for short. This model was made and created by a Dr. John Vann, who is a Christian author, professor and therapist. And he's also written books on this to do for singles and also for marrieds. Excellent model. And if you're a visual learner like me, this is really helpful in just kind of grasping these concepts and really cementing it in our minds. So these progressions, knowing, trust, rely, commit, touch, are progressions for every single relationship in our lives. So it doesn't matter if you're married, this is for friendships, for business partnerships, relationships, marrieds as well. And if you are married, this is going to help you navigate some of those difficult seasons, any season in that marriage relationship. So in each relationship, we're going to try and take, the aim is to take those sliders right up to the top until you're in something like a committed marriage relationship where it goes to touch. So it's a really simple but extremely powerful tool. And today we're looking at the second slider, the slider of trust. So like Jeff said last week, and if you missed that sermon, go back, look at our website, the links are there. I recommend going back and listening to that sermon because knowing someone, that very first slider, is the basis for all of the others. It's really important. It's worthwhile your time. Go back and listen to that. So as we look at trust today, we can all be honest. We probably all at some point in our lives have trust issues. And there are so many varied and different reasons why we have trust issues. So we're going to look at a couple of examples today of maybe why we have trust issues. So the very first picture on the screen is one of the reasons I have trust issues. M&Ms, Skittles, and Reese's Buttercup little button things are not designed to be mixed together. I do not think it is God's will, because you take a handful expecting chocolate and then suddenly you get a burst of fruit flavour. And that's not supposed to be mixed with peanut butter. That is just not how it's supposed to be. So if someone ever does that to me, I have severe trust issues with you. It's just not right. Your palate gets confused. It's not how they're supposed to be eaten. Or what about when you get offered a cookie and this cookie looks amazing and you're ready to take a bite? You pick it up, you put it in your mouth and you chomp into it expecting that gooey, oozy chocolate and you hit a raisin, a healthy raisin. If I'm going to eat a biscuit, it's going to be a good one. I don't want raisins, I want chocolate. So if you give me an oatmeal raisin cookie, it's probably a nice gesture. I do like those cookies. But I've got trust issues, especially when it looks like choc chip. Or what about this slide? Iceland and Greenland. Who in their right mind thought this was a good idea to name these countries those titles? Because if you know Iceland, it is amazingly beautiful and green. And Greenland is amazingly beautiful and icy and white. Who does that? Who names those things that? Trust issues. What about a few serious ones? If you've got kids and you ask them to clean their room and they're like, yeah, Mum, no worries, in a moment goes by, minutes go by, hours, weeks, and the room still isn't clean. They're like, yeah, Mum, I'm going to clean my room. Trust issues. Or what about if you're meeting up with a friend at a cafe and you decide, yep, 12 o'clock is a really great time, we're going to eat lunch and they've got stuff to do afterwards. So you arrive promptly at 12, sit down, you're waiting at the table, 12:01, 12:05, 12:10, and you're looking at the watch going, I'm about to text them. But this isn't just a one-off, this is an all-the-time thing with them. Trust issues. Or what about at work? When you're in a situation and you've got to do this group kind of task together, and your partner has to do a spreadsheet so you can complete the task. And you say to them, hey, I really need that spreadsheet done by this afternoon because we have the deadline of tomorrow morning. And they're like, yep, all sorted. You'll get it by this afternoon. This afternoon comes, spreadsheet's not done. You both get in trouble. Trust issues. How are you supposed to believe them? How are you supposed to trust someone when what they say is the opposite to what they do, or it's confusing, or it's a lie? So some of those issues we just looked at are fun and they're kind of in jest, but that's the reality of relationships. Some of the trust issues we have are real and serious. How do we trust people in those different relationships in our lives? So in this whole series, the key verse for this series is found in Philippians, and it was written by the Apostle Paul in chapter 2, verse 5. He says, "You must have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had." So Paul is talking about this verse in the context of relationships, how we should treat one another. And that's the target mindset we're looking for in all of our relationships, is that we have that mindset of Jesus Christ. And it's fantastic that everyone is in here in church. That's such an important thing. But our prayer is not that you're just here in church. It's that Jesus Christ is transforming your mind. And in that transforming, that then goes out to our relationships around us. Because God has created us to be in relationship. He's designed us that way. We were never meant to be alone. And we need to learn to trust. So how do you trust someone when you don't know them? If you're single, dating, or developing a friendship, you don't know how much you can trust them until you spend that time with them. Are they going to look out and care for you when you're vulnerable with them? Are they going to gossip behind your back when you're not around? You need to get to know somebody before you can trust them. And with these sliders, you never want your trust levels to be higher than your know levels. Because if it is the other way around, if you trust them more than you know them, that's when problems can arise. And there's a quote that says, "Trust is like a car without gas. You can stay in it all you want in relationships, but it won't go anywhere." We need those trust and those know levels to be the same for relationships to move forward. So when we're looking at relationships, there are two reasons that people don't trust people. And the very first reason that a person won't trust someone is that they don't know them. That seems pretty obvious. But the second reason that someone doesn't trust someone is that they do know them. And that's why we have to know somebody. And you can use this in all relationships across your life, like we've been talking about. You think about if you're a boss, you own a business, and you're looking to employ someone. You do all your due diligence to know if this person is worthy of employment. You have an interview with them. You do reference checks. You check them out. Maybe it's a police check. All these things are put in place so you can know whether they are the right person for the job. Or maybe they're already on the team. They're already working for you, and you're looking to promote them. You do all those same kinds of things. Are they worthy of the promotion? Are they worthy of that extra responsibility? Are they trustworthy? You look at it, you research it, you find out. And outside of the workplace, that's how friendships need to be. You need to be asking the question, are they a trustworthy friend that I can put my trust in? And if you're single and dating, you need to be asking, do I know them enough to know if they will be trustworthy as a spouse down the track? When we're little kids, we have so much trust. Kids really are trusting people. But as the time and years go on, we seem to lose that because people hurt us. We lose trust. Someone does something and trust kind of goes down. We think that person should have been trustworthy, but they weren't. And that's why we're on this topic today, because like I said, God has created us to be in relationship. He wants us to trust people because that's where we can thrive. We are designed to have community around us. We are designed to be in relationship. But trust is a tough one because probably every single person here, sitting here today, has had some trust broken at some different level in their life. So I want to come at trust at three different angles today. And the first one is, how do you build trust? The second one is, how do you sustain trust once it's built? And then the third one is, how do you rebuild trust once trust has been broken? So let's start with how do you build trust. So there's a man named Benjamin Franklin who said over 200 years ago a quote, and it's still very relevant today. He said that before marriage, keep your eyes wide open, but then after marriage, eyes half shut. So that first part of the quote speaks to when you're building trust in a friendship, dating relationship. You need to have your eyes wide open so that you don't assume something about the person that isn't true. So you don't find out later that who you thought they were, they're actually a completely different person. Eyes wide open. And we come to a man in the Old Testament named Samson. Samson was a man who was set apart by God, who was in a covenant with God, and he was very blessed by God. And God said to him and his mum, if you never cut your hair in this covenant I'm with you, I'm going to give you unbelievable strength and I will use you for my glory. So Samson was physically strong. I imagine him to be that kind of guy that you look at and think, he's at the gym 24/7. God gave him incredible strength. But he had a great weakness. And his weakness was women. And he got involved in with beautiful women that he should never have trusted. And we see in the Old Testament, in the book of Judges, that his first marriage, his first wife, he treated terrible. And then in chapter 16 of Judges, we see this man, Samson, incredibly blessed by God, get involved with Delilah. And Delilah was actually part of the Philistine group of people. And the Philistines were enemies of the Israelites, and Samson was an Israelite. So technically they should have been enemies. But they get involved together because Delilah was beautiful, but she was a prostitute and she was a con artist. So the Philistines realize, hey, Delilah's getting involved with Samson. He's a threat to us. Let's go to her and pay her something like $25,000 to see if she can find out the secret to his strength. So they go to Delilah and she agrees. So she then comes to Samson and says in her most manipulative con artist voice, how did you get to be so strong, Samson? And I can imagine him saying, well, baby, you know what? The secret to my strength is if you tie me up with 7 strips of undry leather, then I will be as weak as any other man. So she does that. He falls asleep. She ties him up with 7 strips of undry leather and says to him, Samson, the Philistines are coming. But he jumps up, breaks the leather and beats the Philistines, and they go back to their barracks beaten and probably pretty annoyed at Delilah. Now you would think at this moment that Samson would see some really big red flags here. Really big red flags. Delilah just tried to kill him, but she's crying to Samson, oh Samson, you hurt me so bad because you lied to me. This is mind-blowing, really. We can read this in hindsight and think, wow, this is incredible. She tried to kill Samson, and then she's saying, you hurt me because you lied to me. Amazing. But then she goes to him again, tell me the secret to your strength. And she does, this process goes through 2 more times. 3 times the Philistines came and tried to overpower Samson. And each time the Philistines lose because he actually told her a lie. But then we come to Judges chapter 16, verse 15. It says, then Delilah pouted, how can you tell me I love you when you don't share your secrets with me? You've made fun of me 3 times now and you still haven't told me what makes you so strong. She tormented him with her nagging day after day until he was sick to death of it. This should have been major warning signs for Samson. This lady is not trustworthy. She let the enemy come 3 times to try and kill him. Major warning bells. But it says she prodded him day after day, nagging him until she wore him down. And finally, he comes to the point where he trades God's secret, the covenant he had with God, and tells Delilah the truth. If you cut my hair, I will be as weak as any other man. So he goes to sleep, and Delilah does exactly that. She shaves his head off. The Philistines come, they beat him, they gouge his eyes out, and they put him in prison. 3 times she broke his trust, and yet Samson did nothing about it. Red flag, red flag, red flag. But Samson puts his trust in her. Sometimes love really is blind. And that's the danger of trusting someone before you really know them. Trust is built and based on what you know. In Proverbs 25:14, it says, "A person who promises a gift but doesn't give it is like clouds and wind that bring no rain. It's worthless. It promises so much, but it doesn't come through." So is there a person in your life that's always saying and not doing? Because if that's the case, you already have your answer as to their trustworthiness or not. That's a red flag. And I don't know if you've ever noticed, you can see red flags in other people's relationships so much easier than you can see it in your own. For instance, someone's telling you about their relationship and you're talking to a friend and she says, "You know what, I've just started dating this guy. It's really exciting. He's an awesome guy. He took time out to come and see me. You know what? He even broke his parole just to come and spend time with me. How amazing is that?" And you're going, "Red flag, red flag, red flag, what?" But they're completely oblivious to it. We need people around us who we trust to speak into our relationships, to see those blind spots that we can't see. Blind spots. So if you are dating someone and they're saying one thing and doing another, that is an issue. It's an issue and it shows there are deeper spiritual issues at play there that will cause problems down the road if you continue. So don't go down the romance road with someone like that. Put them in the friend zone, remain friends with them, but leave it at that. So how do you build trust? Trust can only grow on what you know about the person. And the only way that can grow is spending time talking, through talking and togetherness over time. So back before myself and Jeff even started dating, we were spending a lot of time together. We've probably talked about our history before in church. We were at the same church together. We were doing an internship together. We had an office. We shared an office in the church together. We were even studying the same course and in the same classroom together. Everything, our whole life seemed to be together. And over that time, we really grew to know each other. It was time. It was quality time together, building trust. And Jeff mentioned that last week, that it's known research that in the first 90 days of a relationship, one of the parties will find out some information about the other person that significantly changes their perception and their knowing that they can trust the person. And half of relationships break up because they realise, "I can't trust." You think about when you're buying a used car. You don't want a lemon. You want a good second-hand used car. So you do due diligence. You research about it. You go, you look online, has this car been in a major accident? Are the kilometres on the tacho actually realistic? You have a look into the history of the car. Because really, when you're in a car, you're in its hands. If it's a lemon, who knows what could happen? And that's the same in our relationships. Do our due diligence in finding out about the person. Ask the questions if you're in a dating relationship. Could this be long term? Could this lead to marriage one day? Are there qualities about this person? Traumas, damage, heartbreaks that they've been through, character defects, drinking or substance abuse problems, integrity issues, sexual faithfulness issues that you think, by the sheer power of your love, you can change them? Because if you're thinking by the sheer power of your love you can change them, you can't. Only God can truly change a person's heart. And that's a red flag if you're thinking your love can change them. Don't make a permanent, binding, till death do us part commitment with someone who is really significantly unhealthy. You build trust by talking and togetherness over time. So once you've built that trust, how do you sustain that trust? So we'll go back to that quote of Benjamin Franklin where he says, "Before marriage, keep your eyes wide open, but after marriage, eyes half shut." And I think he was referring to what the Apostle John wrote when he said that love covers a multitude of sins. And also what the Apostle Paul wrote in the famous love passages in 1 Corinthians 13, that love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. But this is for when you know someone is trustworthy. When you love someone and you know they are trustworthy, you're going to do everything possible to trust them. Because love gives the benefit of the doubt. So when your spouse says one thing and does another, or when your boss says one thing and does that, love says, before I jump to conclusions, I'm going to consider the possibilities, because love always protects, always trusts. And I'm going to give them a chance to explain, because I trust them and I know they are trustworthy. But we can't confuse this with being naive. Love is not naive. Believing the best in someone and giving them trust doesn't negate just being discerning and wise. They go together. So when Paul says we always trust, he means when you love someone, you push their negative traits to the back. When you know they're trustworthy, push their negative traits to the back and put the positive ones to the front. Because love prompts trust, healing, forgiveness. And trust feelings grow out of what we choose to focus on. So for those of you who are married, it's probably safe to say that you have a spouse that lives in your house and a spouse that lives in your head. So let me explain that a bit more. If you're in a situation where maybe you are having a disagreement, you've probably had a bigger conversation with a spouse in your head than the actual person. And in that conversation, it probably goes along the lines of, I'm right, I'm good, this is a good situation because I'm right in this. And those arguments, you generally always win. But in a committed relationship like that, there are things that we all have to overlook sometimes for relationships to last the long haul. And then there are also times when things need to be addressed. And when things need to be addressed, we need to make sure they are real and significant and follow the principle of Ephesians 4:15, which says, we speak the truth in love. We don't constantly dig at our spouse. Sometimes we do need to give it a rest. And we don't need to say everything that comes to mind about what they did or didn't do, because constant digging in a marriage relationship can bury the marriage. Trust feelings grow out of the qualities we choose to focus on. And there's a great example of this in Acts chapter 15, and I used this passage a couple of months ago in our vision series when we were talking about healthy relationships. But I want to look at this passage from a slightly different angle today. So this passage is about the Apostle Paul and Barnabas, and they had a disagreement about a man named John Mark, who John Mark went on their first mission trip with these two guys, but left and went home for whatever reason. And that left a really sour taste in Paul's mouth. So have you ever noticed, if you don't trust someone, you talk about their weakness, but when you do trust someone, you talk about their strengths? So the difference in this situation between Paul and Barnabas was not what they knew about John Mark, because they both knew him well. But the difference in this situation was the qualities they were choosing to focus on. So because Paul had that sour taste in his mouth, he was choosing to focus on John Mark's probably not so good qualities. But Barnabas was choosing to focus on the positive, saying, you know what, I know him. I know he is trustworthy. I know he will be good on this trip. Exact same guy, exact same information, but focusing on different aspects. And Paul says, I can't trust him. And Barnabas says, I can, and they part ways. Maybe it was because that John Mark was Barnabas' cousin, so he knew him slightly better, but that he knew that he could rely on him. And we're going to talk a bit about that next. But is there someone in your life that you're focusing on the negative and you refuse to see all the positives? Because if you want to sustain trust, trust feelings grow out of what you focus on. So what about if you're in a committed relationship like marriage and trust has been broken? And this is going to be a really tough part. And this does come across to all sorts of relationships. And this is tough to talk about when trust has been broken, because you've either been really hurt, betrayed, and you've had enough. Or you're the one who's been heartbroken. Or maybe you're even the perpetrator, the one who's done something that's just broken the heart of someone you love. And one person wonders, how can I ever trust that person again? And the other is asking, how can I rebuild that trust again? But the first thing we want to understand is that there is a big difference between forgiveness and trust. And as followers of Jesus Christ, he says to us, as followers, you need to forgive. In Ephesians 4:32, it says, instead, be kind-hearted to each other, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, just as God through Christ has forgiven you. But you might be saying, how can I forgive them? What they did was terrible. And you can do it like Jesus did when he was hanging on the cross, when he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. The crowd was not asking for forgiveness that day. They didn't even acknowledge they needed forgiveness that day. And that yet here is Jesus saying, Father, forgive them. Not forgiving and holding on to grudge. It's like that saying that you drink poison and expect the other person to die. It affects you. Trust and forgiveness are not the same thing. For instance, we have a big family, so we've got a big car, and you might think, hey, that's great, I need to move a few boxes in a week's time. And you ask me, can I borrow your car because it'll fit my boxes? Maybe I'm not using the car that day, and I say, actually, sure, you can have it. But you return it, and it's covered in mud. It's got a few, like a dent in the wheel or a dent in the side. You know what? I'll probably forgive you. But if you ever ask me to borrow my car again, there is no way I will trust you with it. That's the difference between trust and forgiveness. Maybe this helps a little bit. Forgiveness is past orientated, but trust is future orientated. Forgiveness means letting go, but trust means holding on to someone. Forgiveness is undeserved, but trust needs to be earned. But in all of this, I want to say that forgiveness does not ever mean tolerating abuse. If you are in a relationship where you're being physically, sexually, mentally, emotionally abused, you need to get out. Tell somebody. Let us help you. Talk to us. We can help you. Don't keep yourself in that situation. And now I want to say a word to those of you who have been the perpetrator. Maybe you're the one who has broken someone else's trust. And you're thinking, how will I ever rebuild that trust? You'll likely want to resolve it in the past and get back to the future to become more normal in your relationship before the offended party is ready to do so, especially if it's been a really, really severe breach. And this is where I can honestly say I am not an expert, and I am relying so heavily on the information of those who are for this. But counsellors say that this is one of the most common sources of confusion and ongoing conflict in relationships. And it happens in marriages where one person has an affair and the marriage couple come together and say, you know, our marriage is really important, we want to sort this out. The spouse who was offended, who trust was broken, says, you know what, I need restrictions to be put in place in order for us to move forward because I don't trust you right now. Different to forgiveness. This is moving forward in the relationship. So the one who's done the offence agrees to it. They go maybe weeks, months, years. And eventually the one who has done the offending is like, I'm tired of these restrictions. I'm tired of it. When will you start trusting me again? This isn't right. And if that's you, if you're the offender, you need to remember you were the one who hurt the other person. It's going to take time for healing to take place. You're the one who messed up. You're the one who needs to be patient and to give time for healing to happen. Because that's the only way relationships will be restored. Doesn't mean you haven't forgiven. It means moving forward, trust needs to be established. And if you're the one who has broken the trust, you need to be more patient, more long-suffering, because it is a process and it takes time. And this second caution I want to give, if that is the situation for you and where you find yourself, is that if the offenders want to trust to be fully regained without any significant changes in the relationship, that's not okay. It's totally unrealistic. Because you think about if you break your arm in order to be healed needs to be restricted. It needs to be in a cast without moving. You can't do all the things you previously did without a non-broken arm. And that's the same in relationships where trust is broken. For a time, there needs to be restrictions in place in order for healing to happen, for trust to be rebuilt. If you've betrayed your spouse, they'll want to put restrictions in place to stop that hurt from happening, and that's totally fair. So how do you build trust? Recognize the difference between trust and forgiveness and be willing to put in the time. But how do you know if someone can be trusted ever again? And you know what? You don't actually know until you trust again. It is a risk. But like I said before, God has created us to be in relationships. That's his design for us. We were never meant to be alone. And here's what happens when you start trusting someone. You end up trusting them. It's pretty simple, and you keep trusting them. But in everything, we are sinful people, and we all make mistakes. At some point, someone will make a mistake again. And it's in that mistake that you can find out if they're trustworthy or not. You know, in my own relationships or friendships or whatever it is, if someone has offended me or done something wrong to the trust in our friendship, and they come to me and say, you know what, hey, I'm really sorry for this thing that I did, and here I want to restore the friendship, here's the steps I want to take, can you please forgive me? You know what, I trust them even more because they have taken ownership of their mistakes and they're willing to put those restrictions in place. It's what happens after the offense that's really important as well. If someone lets you down, it doesn't mean that you throw them out. It means you can work through it and let your trust be seasoned with grace. Because every single one of us sitting here today has probably had trust broken in some sense. Every single one of us has probably had a friend that may have betrayed us, a parent who doesn't show up, a parent who doesn't say what they should have, a teacher that wrongs us, a coach that does the wrong thing, a spouse and kids that hurt us. Everybody has hurts. But it's when we start keeping people away from us, when we put a shield around us and we stop being vulnerable, that's a problem also. We don't want to trust anymore because we think it's just hurts too much. So here's what I've been praying as I've been preparing this message, that through the power of God and his Holy Spirit, that you will learn to trust again. That you will learn to trust and extend that trust also. Because if you don't get past this, the older you get, the lonelier it gets. And God never intended us to live this life alone. And most of all, in all of this, Jesus wants to have a relationship with you. And he is the ultimate trustworthy person. He will never, ever let you down. He is always there for you. And the Bible says that he is the same yesterday, today, and forevermore. So if you're struggling with trust in your life, come and trust Jesus because he is so trustworthy. And then as we trust Jesus, that can extend out to our relationships with one another. God can give us that grace to do that. He can give us that forgiveness. He can give us that desire to rebuild relationships and open ourselves up again. Jesus is faithful. He's always been faithful to me, and he will be faithful and trustworthy to you as well. So let me pray this morning. Jesus, I thank you so much that you are our trustworthy God, that you are who you say you are. Jesus, thank you so much that you guide us and lead us, and I pray that as we put our trust in you, you will help us to extend that to those around us. And I pray for each one of us in those situations where we have been offended, where trust has been broken, that you will help us to forgive and that we can move forward in our relationships, that we'll be open and vulnerable again to those around us. I pray that you will give us wisdom and discernment in those areas to do that wisely. Jesus, I pray that we will have community, that we will live seasoned with grace in your love. And I pray most of all that you will show us how trustworthy you are. In Jesus' name, amen.